It was an early June morning, 1 year after I got back to this country after studying and teaching in Rome. I took up a teaching position at Fordham University in New York, a Jesuit school, despite the fact that I am not a Jesuit. I think we both had good taste. I was in what was called a transition year between Europe and America. That's before the term gap year got invented. And in transition, I knew I needed a wise spiritual director to help me get through those first couple of years being back in the U.S. That early June day, I drove up to the Franciscan monastery and was saying to myself, what is it I want to get out of today's spiritual direction meeting? And I said to myself, what I want is time off for good behavior. I've been moderately virtuous, did well teaching and in writing, directing students, and being a part-time parish priest as well. Pretty satisfied with myself. So I went into the office, Father Anthony arrived, and he sat down and said, by the way, I won't be back till September. And I said, yes. And then I admitted immediately that I had been attracted to the Benedictine way of life, having been taught by that in Rome, and thought maybe the monastic life had something to order. And he said, to offer. And he said, well, no time like the present and to find out. In 10 days, I found myself in a monastery in New Hampshire, was there for 2 weeks, back again for 2 weeks during the summer, and for the next 3 years struggled about whether I had a monastic vocation. I wanted time off for good behavior and found myself in a monastery. Now, obviously, no evangelist, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, gives you time off for bad behavior at all. But of all the evangelists, Matthew doesn't give us time off for good behavior either. Because that's what's happening in tonight's gospel. One more time, the Sermon on the Mount. And he ups the ante every single time. He doesn't let us off the hook. Like that reading from Sirach. It's about deciding, choosing good or evil. And we have the opportunity to choose that all the time. And Matthew makes us choose it. Or as Paul says in tonight's reading, eye has not seen nor ear heard what God has prepared for those who love them. That day, I was not prepared to go to a monastery. But that's what God wanted by way of my spiritual director, to do the right thing. Let's take those 3 points of Matthew's gospel in reverse order and think about how they are not letting us off for good behavior. First one is, do not make a false oath. Say yes when you mean yes and no when you mean no. Now, I admit, despite the fact that I am a New Yorker in exile, on this issue, I'm in a naive support group. I think people tell the truth. I was in a meeting one time when I was the dean at Catholic University, a PR evaluation meeting, and they were teaching us how to do the annual performance review, the most dreaded thing in the world. And we were asked, how many people do we think exceeded expectations, were adequate, or those who worked against the operation by their work habits? What percentages were they? And the facilitator said to me, Father, you are so naive. I think people work hard and tell the truth. I think yes is yes and no is no. And that's exactly what Paulinus says in Hamlet, Act 1, to thine own self be true. Honesty. Truthfulness. It seems like it's a no-brainer. In 2004, the English playwright Alan Bennett's play, The History Boys, appeared in London for the first time. History Boys is about a play about pre-university boys with their special mentor, Mr. Hector, and 8 boys under a bizarre tutelage of the way he taught. toward the end of the play, Mr. Hector dies. And in the stage play, by the way, not the movie, sadly, in the stage play, it ends with his colleague, Mrs. Lincott, describing what happened to the eight boys and what great successes they were. Magistrates, lawyers, owned businesses. And then she said about the last one, except for Posner. Posner lives a reclusive life in a cottage, having periodic breakdowns. He reads a lot in the library and follows his classmates' careers. He lives a shallow life online and has many friends, though none in his right name or his own gender. The internet is an astounding invention, and it certainly is the industrial revolution of our age. Information, formation, support groups, so many other things. But what about its seductiveness, and what about its addictiveness? Which leads to point two. Matthew's Jesus says, you can commit adultery in your heart. Jimmy Carter is in the paper this weekend because he's giving over part of his farm in Plains, Georgia to solar panel to generate energy. But in 1976, he was in the papers for having said he looked upon a lot of women with lust. And it turns out that in their biography, Rosalind and Jimmy didn't have the best or easiest of marriages. Internet addiction is one thing. Internet pornography addiction is something else. And all that takes is the click of a mouse. And what happens? Treating other people as persons, as objects. About addiction, Nancy Reagan said, just say no. Well, sometimes it's not that simple. The question is really, why? Why do we click the mouse? Why do we find that site? What's missing in our life? In our real relationships to go virtual? What's happening in our life with God? That there's an emptiness that we try to fill it immediately by something that goes away with another click of the mouse. Are we dialoguing with other people really or with God? Or with the machine. He lives a shadow life online and has many friends, though none in his right name or in his own gender. Number three, the last one, it is not just killing, but verbal fratricide, killing by words. And again, the question of anger with in our relationships, and sometimes that does happen. What is it that makes us angry, and what is it that you and I need to do to get away from that temptation? Now, in fairness, I think sometimes the issue is we expect someone to change overnight, and they're not going to change, and that's our problem. Or as I hear it said to many priest friends, in the clerical life, we don't become different, we just become more. If that's the case, then what are the buffers we need to make sure anger and our words don't kill and reveal the wrong side of us when the right side of us is about virtue, about doing what is right? Brother, sister, mother, father, daughter, the families that we are in to cherish, and yet sometimes are the very objects of the anger that we can't suppress. Notice that Matthew's gospel tonight says, not just if someone's angry with us, but if they're angry, not just if we're angry with them, but they're angry with us. The same thing about bringing a gift to the altar. Not that we have a problem, but someone's got a problem with us. My friends, Matthew does not give us time off for good behavior. He ups the ante. And that's called real gospel living when it's not cheap grace, but hard choices. And that's what God's providence gives us tonight as we come to this altar to try to live the gospel, the good news, that asks choices of us and not always easy. That June day, I said to myself, all I want is time off for good behavior. Instead, I was prodded to meet God on a deeper level. Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, what God has prepared for those who love Him.